Thanks to HelloFresh.com for supporting this podcast. Receive $35 off your first week of deliveries when you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK35. Remember, go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK35 to get $35 off your first week's deliveries. Thanks, HelloFresh.
I have
Current Geek! Current Geek!
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All-Stars, geeks of the world, and you to keep you current on all things that matter most. I'm Scott Johnson with Tom Merritt. Hi, Tom.
Hello there, Scott Johnson.
How are you?
I am coming to you from a dry area in my house, even though it's raining outside, and I'm very happy.
Oh, good. It's different than last week where you were in a white room upstairs away from the flooding.
Yeah, I had to move heavenward. In order to avoid the floodwaters.
You ascended then.
It's all fixed for the time being. All knock on gavel.
Ascension of Tom is what we're talking about. Hey, welcome back to the show, everybody. We're really happy to be here because we have guests, and we have the following
good guests
with us. Yeah, good guests. Ashley Robinson. You know her as Ashley Victoria Robinson sometimes. You also may know she's an actress and a huge geek. She's always doing geeky stuff, and I love following what she's up to. Ashley, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me and for letting me reschedule.
Oh, it's all good. It's good to have you finally here. She is from Canada, but lives in LA. So there's that. Oh, and also I played her dad in her web series called Red Shirt Diaries. And that was fun.
That's true. Every time I email Scott, I call him my space dad.
Yep, space dad, which makes me feel kind of weird for some reason. But anyway, welcome to the show. It's good to have you. Also with us, we have Michael Fay. He is a returning guest. He's the lead developer on 1Password. You may remember last time he was on a boat. Now he is on dry land. It's landlubber Michael Fay. Hello, Mike.
Good evening. How are you guys?
Good, man. Thanks for coming back.
Yeah, are you kidding? I've been wanting to do this for, well, about a year, it turns out. And so I think we'll just make this an annual thing.
What's right?
We'll just every
Well, and Scott means not just coming back on the show, but coming back to land.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Thank you. It's good to be back. Good. I swayed sort of, you know, back and forth every time I was standing still for a couple of days, but I finally adjusted. And
I heard,
you know,
about that land legs. I heard about that harrowing moment when you had to knock one of your teeth out with a skate. I thought that was a real rough moment there. That's right.
Yeah, it builds character, though.
Oh, good. Well, all right. Hey, everybody, let's get started. We got stuff to talk about. It always starts with headlines, and I'll bet Tom has them. Oh, that's quiet. Hold on. There we go. Let me try that again.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Tom?
Scott, on BBC Radio 2 this week, Peter Capaldi told host Joe Wiley that this coming season of Doctor Who will be his last as the Doctor. Capaldi said, I can't praise the people I work with more highly, but I have always been someone that did a lot of different things. Except he said it in a Scottish accent. Capaldi's last episode as the Doctor will be shown this Christmas. So he's got the coming season and then the Christmas special. And then that will be it. That will also be the last episode under the direction of Stephen Moffat. I'm sorry, Moffat. Don't know why I said Moffat. That feels like a Freudian slip somehow. Anyway, Chris Chibnall will take over with the new Doctor. He'll get to pick his own Doctor the way Stephen Moffat did.
Okay, so... Ashley, I already heard some consternation from you. Doesn't this happen every time, though? Matt Smith is not going to be the Doctor anymore. Oh, no. And then we get a guy everyone loves again. And then he steps down. Oh, no. And then the new guy everyone likes. So it's going to be the same. We'll like the next guy, right?
That's true. I'm hopeful that we'll like the next guy. I'm hopeful that it's maybe a more diverse guy than like the last 14 white guys who played the Doctor, who are all equally wonderful. I just really have a soft spot in my heart for Peter Capaldi. And I think he's been a little bit shortchanged by some of the storytelling that his character's been hamstrung by, like whether or not Clara is going to leave because Jenna Coleman changes her mind about whether she's going to leave. Mm. So I just would have liked to had some more time with him. I think he's a very special doctor.
Oh, and he's also, he's one of the ones that's more seasoned, right? We got an older dude. And to hear this in the same week that we lost
John Hurt.
Yeah, John Hurt, War Doctor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's just a bummer to get these two bits of news at once that we're having to cycle through these guys. But Michael, what do you think? You excited? Yeah. You sad? Where are you at with Doctor Who?
Wait, John Hurt died?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry you're hearing it here first.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh, that sucks.
Not William Hurt, by the way. Some people have confused him with William Hurt, and I got a few emails saying, I can't believe he died. No. And I'm like, no. He's still here, different guy. But, yeah, it was a sad day.
Yeah, also, John Cougar is still alive. I fall into the camp of current geek guests so that don't listen to, or that don't watch Doctor Who. I gave it a try one time, and it didn't grab me, but it's one of those things where I can start any time. So
yeah, you know, here's your chance. Ongoing, so there'll be a brand new doctor. You can start fresh.
Yeah, and won't it always sort of be there? Like, that's the thing, is someone's always going to carry Doctor Who now in this streaming world we live in. So I've got a few episodes under my belt. I saw a lot of the old ones when I was a kid. And, you know, though I'm not that caught up on the more modern incarnation, I think I got through most of the Eccleston stuff, which was the first bit of the comeback. So I'm way behind compared to most people. But watching Matt Smith act on The Crown, which is excellent, by the way.
He's also inexplicably nude a lot in that show.
Yeah, he is.
Like, he's the one with no clothes on in the whole scene.
His shirt, his shirt is always
about
on.
The historical accuracy.
Right. His shirt is often off, and I don't know why that is. You don't get that from pretty much every other actor in there.
Yeah, or anything I've ever seen of Prince Philip.
Yeah, good point. But, you know, it was a strapping young lad at the time.
Oh, my God. That's so funny.
Yeah. I'm a huge fan of that. But watching him act made me go, oh, well, that's the other thing I need to do, is to see his turn as the Doctor, and now Capaldi and everybody else.
And Matt Smith is my wife's favorite. She likes Peter Capaldi, but it's just not the same. So it always feels like you need, like, when you find your favorite, you need a bounce back Doctor, and then you can start to really like the next Doctor after that. And so I'm hoping she'll like whoever they get, because I loved David Tennant, and Matt Smith was the guy where I'm like, I ended up liking him, but it took me a while. Whereas Peter Capaldi, I was in from the beginning on. I personally have been campaigning for Hayley Atwell to become the next Doctor, because I think she would make a killer Doctor Who.
What's she doing now?
That would be amazing.
She has an ABC series that she was given when they were like, yeah, we're going to give you $700,000 per episode for Agent Carter, which is less than Doctor Who gets. So we're going to ruin your second season, and no one's going to be able to see it.
Yeah. But that,
which
that
is a
series,
bummer.
No one's watching.
Yeah.
That's true. Right? So there's a good chance. But I think you're
I
more likely to
say that. I don't wish ill on anyone's series, but I'm like, no, let her be free of that series so she can become Dr. Who.
Yeah. That'd be amazing. She'd be great.
I just think you're more likely to get another man who's like a person of color before you get a woman. And it's kind of like the James Bond thing. Like, everyone is so invested into what the traditional version of the Doctor is, and this, especially with a new showrunner, is an exciting opportunity to see someone different.
Yeah
I've heard Richard Ayoade bandied about as a possible. He would be an interesting cast as well.
I hear Ben Whishaw a lot too, who's the current Q in James Bond.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh,
he's more your traditional kind of.
Yeah.
So Q's the one that introduces Bond to the Borg, right? Is that how that worked? Oh my God.
That's exactly how it goes.
All right. You have to confuse them all.
Delta Quadrant. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's the one.
Right. And then they land on Tatooine.
There you go.
Speaking of Tatooine, that's a desert planet. Here's another story about desert planets. Frank Herbert's son, Brian Herbert, tweeted that Legendary Pictures has signed Denis Villeneuve, a director of Arrival, to direct a new Dune series film project.
Mm. That's not TV, though. We're talking film series, like a number
of
films.
Oh. Well, they say that Dennis has been hired to direct a film version, but the project apparently will include film and TV.
Okay. So a little like the Dark Tower deal, speaking of
it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm down with that. Now, in this room, the biggest Herbert/Dune fan in the room is probably Tom, but I don't want to assume that because our guest may as well. But Tom, I want to throw this at you first.
Sure.
I tried to read the Dune.
You think I am the Kwisatz Haderach?
Well,
I
read the first book and couldn't go further. It was really...
You've only read half the book.
Right. And it was hard for me.
Because the second book is really the rest of the first book. He just was forced to publish it as two books.
So I guess I got through half of a book that was intended to be a book, and I couldn't do it. And I don't know why I couldn't do it. I kind of like the old... You know, weird Dune movie that exists in history.
The Kyle MacLachlan.
That one.
David Lynch one.
Yeah. It's all we had, so you had to take what we had. But I know that world And I and I saw the sci-fi miniseries thing that was set in the future, set later or before, or whatever it was. I don't know if it was a prequel or a sequel, but I remember liking how everything looked. And I'm a big, as you know, everyone listening to me on the show and other shows I do, you know, I like big deserty places with tons of dirt and like giant worms and weirdo people. I mean, it is my jam. It's just that book was so heady. So my question to you is, how much are they going to have to Hollywood this thing down to make it palatable for the average audience in today's cinema world where, you know, they're struggling to fill seats?
Denis Villeneuve, I never pronounce his name the same way twice, but is the right guy based on Arrival. And the reason I say that is that Arrival, the short story that it's based on, Story of Your Life, is incredibly complex. Mm. There is no way, when I read that short story, I thought anyone could turn it into a television show or a movie. And they did it. And that is impressive. Now, it's not all the director, obviously. It's also screenwriter and the actors and the crew and everything. It's a group effort. But here's somebody who knows how to do that, knows what that looks like. Let's take a complex storyline. Dune is a much less complex storyline than The Story of Your Life was. And yet, it has defied translation, right? Mm-hmm. Like, every time they do it, it gets a little better. Jodorowsky tried to do Dune and never got the movie made. Lynch tried to do Dune.
It's a great documentary, though.
Oh, yeah. I highly recommend that documentary. It's a good point. Yeah. Go watch that. But then they had the BBC series that you're talking about, and that was a little better than Lynch's version, by all accounts. You know, your opinion may vary, but generally speaking, that's what folks mean. So maybe this is it. Maybe this is the time they do it and they don't have to Hollywood it up. I think that's what Lynch was so upset about with his version of Dune, because the director's cut is much easier to follow than the one that was released. And I think maybe letting the guy who was able to take Story of Your Life and turn it into Arrival can pull it off if they just let him do his thing.
Yeah, and he has a chance coming up here soon with the Blade Runner sequel. He's also directing that. And he made, for people that don't know, want to think of some modern context for him outside of Arrival, another one he did was, what's the one with the drug running and the stuff with the...
Sicario.
Sicario, thank you. Sicario is amazing. That movie is so good. And I'm not saying it's got any connection to Dune in terms of tone or anything, but that guy knows how to make movies. He's made nothing but cool movies that I've ever seen him make. And I'm telling you, the big test will be Blade Runner. If he can pull that off and that looks or is as cool as that teaser trailer makes it seem and can somehow revive that thing. Oh, man. Like, he's your guy. So I'm totally with you. Ashley, are you a fan of, I guess it's Denis or Denis. How do you say that guy's name? Denis, I guess. But do you like his work? Have you seen these movies?
It's Denis Villeneuve.
There you go. See, you're from France. You have that whole Quebec
thing. I saw Arrival.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
No, you're fine. I just said you're from Canada, so you got all these French Canadians up there. So you guys say French words better than we do.
We do, but I know Patrick is still going to come at me for my pronunciation because it's not quite Parisian French. Mm. I think he's a great director, and I think if you can, like Tom was saying, if you can take on something like Arrival, then Dune, I think, should be not easy, but something that he could develop in the same way, because it's not as complicated an idea, but it's more mythology, which is, you know, a different kind of breakdown you have to do. But I am so excited that he is going to be the person to shepherd this into the Hollywood machine, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully they do a good job. Michael, you excited?
Yeah, definitely. Like, I think that it would be cool to have. I sort of missed the Dune train, I guess you could say, when I was younger. And sort of the movie came out with Kyle MacLachlan. I feel like this would be the kind of world building that this story would need. Seems like it would be better served on television than a movie series, though. Mm. I mean, with a movie, I feel like the stakes are a little bit higher. You have to sort of have a hit with the first one in order to get to the next one. But with TV, you can have a little bit more of a slow burn. You can, you know, you look at something like The Expanse, right? Like, they've been able to sort of flesh that story out across an entire season instead of having to cram key plot points into a, you know, 2-hour movie.
Yeah, that show's awesome. So, Tom, this book was written in 1965.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's part of my problem. Maybe I need to go back to it and try it again. It was years ago. Okay. I'm going to do it. Yeah. I'm going to go back to Frank Herbert. I'm going to sup at his feet.
Or just wait for Denis Villeneuve to direct it.
That was impeccable.
Yeah, really good.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Patrick's going to be impressed.
Something he didn't direct is this YouTube video that made the rounds. It was on our subreddit. It started on Jukin Media, JUKIN Media.com, of a robot arm using a stylus to check the I'm not a robot captcha box move past the captcha. And in the video, the robot arm dons virtual shades and plays some Snoop Dogg because it's a robot and it just proved it could fool the captcha.
I'm trying to show the chat and I can't. We'll put the link in the chat room, but it
yeah, we'll have the link for it.
Great. But. Yeah, that didn't make me feel good. It made me feel like, oh, well, all right. I guess this isn't so cool. Like, I've always really appreciated the captcha checkbox because the captcha checkbox is easier than looking at a really crappy photo and deciphering numbers or letters in it. And then putting that in a capture box and getting it wrong and telling it to refresh because I can't read what that says. Like, that seemed like such a simple thing. And now you're telling me that that's about as secure as nothing.
Well, the way it works
sometimes you have to do both, too, which is always a bummer.
Yeah, that's true.
The way it works is it can tell when an algorithm is moving the mouse versus when a physical arm is moving it. Mm-hmm. So what this shows is that if you have a robot arm, it doesn't matter if it's held by a person, it can get past it. I don't think it's very effective at getting past the captcha if you're a spam bot that wants to do, you know, thousands of these a minute.
Right. Oh, look at him holding it down. Oh, that just is not cool. All right. Well, that's fine. Hey, listen,
it's
whatever.
Funny. It's just funny.
It is. I like
and
it.
The robot arm is probably operated by a human anyway. It's probably not, you know, automatic.
And the deal with it stuff at the end is pretty great.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right. Well, watch out, everybody. You're not a robot. You're still a robot.
Laugh meter 1 through 10. What do we think?
I'd give it a nervous 8 because it makes me think that you can get past security when, once again, security can be circumvented, but it's also funny. So I'll give it a nervous 8, if that's a way to say it.
Any other ratings?
Yeah. Any other ratings? On? It's 1 out of 10, everybody. What do you say, Ashley? What would you give it?
It made me laugh, so I'd probably give it a solid 9. I'm not afraid of robots.
Are you like...
That's what you say now. Wait till they're checking all your boxes and stuff. This is it.
Look,
end time.
I'm an immigrant. Everyone's already checking all my boxes, and I got to do all the background checks. I can take a robot. That's
true. Actually, Michael, you're in the business of writing security software. Does this sort of thing freak you out at all? Like, I probably shouldn't, because you know what you're doing is very different than this. But what's your take on it as a guy who's, you know, makes software that's keeping people's passwords secure?
I think that this is the natural progression of what researchers are going to try and get robots to do. I mean, this is fairly unsurprising in terms of, like, yes, of course there's going to be a robot checking the captcha checkbox. Like, this is, yeah,
we're going
to
get,
I'm not at all surprised. I think this is, you know, this is cool.
All right. Did they have to put googly eyes on it? Cause that's the part that's freaking me out. Sorry,
oh, yeah.
Tom, go
Absolutely.
Ahead.
So Sundance was last weekend, and Netflix won the We Spent the Most Money on a Movie award by spending $12.5 million to acquire a movie called Mudbound, directed by David Rees, which tells the story of two men finding commonality in racially divided post-World War II southern United States. Netflix will release Mudbound simultaneously online and in theaters, which is generally death for its box office, but they don't care. They just want people to watch it on Netflix. They release it in theaters so they can qualify for awards. Netflix ended up buying 9 films, the most out of any of the studios present at the festival. So more than Sony and Warner Brothers and all of those. Amazon paid $12 million for a romantic comedy called The Big Sick, directed by Michael Showalter, produced by Judd Apatow, and based on the true story of the courtship of a Muslim man of an American woman and how her parents disapproved and then she got sick and he took care of her, and it's a romantic comedy. You can write the rest from there. Amazon also paid $6 million for a Grateful Dead documentary called Long Strange Trip.
So this is the happening of what Netflix is doing. So we already knew they were working on, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of original content in the form of bingeable series and things. They've been doing that for a couple of years. But I had always wondered, when would they start shoring up their film catalog outside of comedy specials and the weird British stuff they'll bring over and things like that? But when were they going to get some other stuff under their belt so that one day my prediction comes true, which is Netflix ends up with, and didn't we talk about this on the show? They said that at some point there was, like, I can't remember what the percentage was, but it was like half of our content will be original And the other half.
Well, and the significant thing here, I mean, Netflix has been buying films right and left. They bought films at Sundance last year. They've been acquiring films all over the place. This isn't new that they're acquiring films. The big news here is that Netflix and Amazon outspent Universal and Warner Brothers and Sony.
Yeah.
And the likes.
That is a big deal. Yeah, that's great. Ashley. Yeah, go ahead.
Can I chime in with 2 points? Netflix did say that they wanted half their content to be original content, but that doesn't always mean it's stuff that was made by their studio. They can show a TV show like ITV's Derek, which is the Ricky Gervais show about the guy who works in the old folks home. And that is considered a Netflix original because they distribute it in North America, even though it is funded by ITV and Britain. So that is technically considered Netflix original. So it doesn't always mean stuff like Stranger Things or Orange is the New Black. So buying up a movie like this from Sundance kind of fills in that same mandate. And also, it's interesting that they outspent everyone, because as far as we as like consumers understand, Netflix has never made a profit. They've just always turned their money over into future projects. So this either means that they've made a lot of profit that they're not telling people about, or it's going to be one of their biggest gambles to date. And it'll be really interesting to see if it pays off.
Well, they had a really good quarter, didn't they, Tom? They had
No, they've made a profit, but they also spend an unsustainable amount on acquiring content, and Ashley's absolutely right. There have been a lot of questions about whether they can keep spending that much money.
I wonder what the difference is between buying, say, Peaky Blinders for 3 seasons from the BBC or whoever makes that, and calling that a Netflix original and always having it in their catalog, versus something like this where they go to a film festival like Sundance and buy up a bunch of stuff. Michael,
Good example too is Better Call Saul, which here in America we watch on AMC, but in the UK it's a Netflix original because they acquired the rights there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish that was true here, because I'm not.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, get yourself to the UK via VPN.
That's maybe. True, and I also have A&E now, or not A&E.
AMC.
No, AMC. That's what I meant. Michael, you excited?
LAI ACTA-est on your cable. So.
AIE, look it up.
LMNOP.
You excited for the idea of more original content? And what do you think about them spending so much money?
So I think it's... I feel that Netflix and Amazon sort of snuck onto the scene quietly and then just sort of built up their catalog and built up their war chest over the years. And then they get to just walk into Sundance and do something like this. I personally don't think of like Netflix and Amazon as big studios as much as I look at them as content distributors. But I mean, they are very big studios. Stranger Things and Orange is the New Black and Daredevil and all the Marvels. Like, they are creating a ton of original content. And so I think that this is great. Like, this is really cool. To anything that makes my Netflix subscription more worthwhile, I am totally all in on.
Yeah, I wonder what the Crown deal was. I'd love to know how they got that, or if that was always
is their most expensive series to date, and I believe it was always a Netflix joint.
Okay, so that was them doing it. I just am so impressed and blown away by it, and I will be embarrassed for this industry if it doesn't win like at least a half a dozen Emmys next time the Emmys roll around.
Claire Foy and John Lithgow both won performance awards at SAG, so that's usually a good indicator that the rest of the industry will follow suit.
Yeah, I hope so.
If that makes you feel
especially
better.
Especially Lithgow. I know that guy's been around forever. I know he's a legend in his own time. I know he's really diverse and great, and everyone already liked John Lithgow, but his performance as Winston Churchill is something to behold.
Yeah, and didn't Stranger Things get the ensemble SAG? I think they did.
Group SAG.
It did.
Because that's where all the memes of Winona Ryder came from.
Yeah. That's going to be my boy band when I'm 80, Tom. It's going to be called Group SAG. I'm really excited about it.
Oh, that's not right.
Onward to Jalopnik.com.
I think that's hilarious.
Jason Torchinski of Jalopnik.com put together a theory to explain why Pixar's cars have eyes, speak English, and yet still have door handles and windows for people to use. He speculates, and I'm not going to go into the entire theory, it's pretty long, you're going to have to read it yourself, but he speculates, in summary, that the cars have become the external body of human-derived creatures. His complex explanation of this involves an apocalypse where only car enthusiasts, because they had been driven to the hills by autonomous cars survive and then embed themselves in their cars in order to survive the apocalypse and then grow into them. He has a whole thing about how it works in practice that involves petrochemicals being converted into nutrients and babies grown into vats and then embedded in cars and whatnot. But it is both disturbing and compelling.
I love every second of that you just said. I've always wondered, like, I've seen Cars a few times, the first one, never saw the second one. Third one's on its way. Many believe them to be the lesser of the Pixar films, but kids come in droves and they make a lot of money for Disney Pixar. So all their success to the side, if you start thinking about it too much, there's a Bob Costas car in there. He even calls himself Bob Costas, or maybe it's a take on, oh, maybe it's Bob Cutlass.
Bob Carstas.
Yeah, I think it's Cutlass, actually. I'm not sure.
Bob Cutlass, okay.
But they, now I'm starting to think, oh, did they put the ghost of, you know, Bob Costas in this
was
car?
Bob Costas, one of the car enthusiasts who survived the apocalypse.
Right. And what a family.
Oh, my,
what a
God.
What a family-friendly future they all live in. Isn't that nice? But it is a little weird. There are no people in those movies. None. Like, no human bodies, nobody in those cars. When it's the stands and they're all watching the NASCAR stuff, it's just cars out there watching cars race. Like, it's kind of awesome if you start thinking about it. And I love that somebody went through the trouble to do this. So, well done, that guy.
It's entirely possible, likely one might even say, that Jason Torchinski, who wrote this article, put a little too much thought into it. He thought about it a little too hard. I mean, I think the answer is pretty obvious when you get a question like this, is that it's just an alternate universe where we evolved into cars instead of the humans we are today. Mm-hmm. It's obvious.
Okay. Why do we have to, why door handles then?
Yeah, why do we need the door
handles? Is that what monster trucks is too?
Yeah. They have those in those movies. They have all that stuff. They have Winnebagos with eyes and mouths. Everything lives. Think of it this way. There's a giant car trailer that has cars inside of it. So when it goes and pulls up somewhere, and it's got the voice of Cliff Clavin from Cheers, it poops a car out the back of itself, and it's a whole nother car. Think of that.
It really just feels like a logical extension of Fury Road at this point, that they become one with their cars.
Yes. Well, I'm all for that, as you might be thinking. Great stories today, as always, and they come to us from many a fan. Tom, I work with Tony Bryans.
I am only flattered that
oh,
you
good.
Would mistake me for
all
Brian.
All right, great. Who submitted this week, and who should we thank?
From currentgeek.reddit.com, we got stories from Strike It Rich One, Jeff Rose, Gatekeeper, Captain Kipper, Tattooed, spelled T-A-T-2-E-D, and I Am Sci-Fi. Thank you, and everybody who submits and votes on the stories at currentgeek.reddit.com.
Indeed. Before we go anywhere, we'd like to let our guests talk about some things before we do our quiz. We do this in the middle of the show because it's weird and not like normal podcasts, so we like it. Ashley, I want to hear from you first. What kind of stuff are you up to, and where should people be looking for your cool projects?
Cool. So if you listen to the episode with Jason Inman, who's my husband, then he probably told you about our amazing Kickstarter for our comic miniseries, Jupiter Jet. We have just about 2 weeks left for that. So if you want to go and fund a comic book story about a 16-year-old girl with a jetpack in the 1930s who punches guys with glowing eyes and shoots ray guns, then you can find all of that at JupiterJetComic.com. We just passed $20,000 today. And if we hit our $23,000 stretch goal, we will be adding a backup story drawn by a DC Comics artist who worked on The Flash. But if we don't hit it, then I'm never going to tell you who he is. So please go and donate and check that out and pick up some cool comic stuff at JupiterJetComic.com.
Is it who I think it is? I think I know who it is. I'm not going to say.
I'm not going to say. I'll tell you off the air.
All right, because I think I know who it is, like actually know him. All right, well, we'll talk after the air. Hey, Michael, what are you doing these days? Tell us about 1Password and why it's awesome.
Yeah, so I am a team lead on 1Password over at Agile Bits, and we have this awesome app that everybody needs. It's called 1Password, as you already mentioned. And the basic idea is, so 1Password is a password manager that helps keep you safe online, right? Everyone uses... Most people use the same username and password for all their different services, or they have a variation of their passwords for different services so that their bank password is similar to their Facebook password, which is similar to their email password. And the problem is that if any one of those things get compromised, you're totally hosed, right? Mm-hmm. So we have 1Password, which you only need to remember 1 password, and it unlocks all of your other passwords. So you can start out by sort of filling it in with all of your different accounts. And as you use it, as you log into different websites on your computer, 1Password will ask you to save that information there. And then eventually you can just go in and start changing all your passwords to random, unique, long, complex passwords of letters and numbers and things that you don't even remember. I remember none of my passwords. I just know my 1Password, and it's fantastic. So go to 1Password.com, sign up. It's the digit 1 and then the word password. And sign up today.
One of my favorite apps, and I use the Mac app. I use the version on iOS. I have them synchronized, and it's awesome. It's changed my life. So thanks for doing that. Thanks for all your hard work on that.
Absolutely. It is my pleasure.
We're going to real quick take a tiny, tiny break. And when we come back, it's time for the pop quiz. Stay tuned. Hey guys, wanted to take a second and talk about HelloFresh at HelloFresh.com. I loves me some HelloFresh. Why? Because they send me fresh ingredients to my door, everything I need to make the food I want to eat. It's a meal delivery kit service that makes cooking fun, easy, and convenient. Each week, they create new delicious recipes and step-by-step instructions, and each one is taking maybe 30 minutes to complete is all. No big deal. They source all the freshest ingredients, measured to the exact quantities needed, and there's no food waste. So everything's just delivered to your doorstep with a special insulated box, and boom, you're in. We've teamed up with HelloFresh, and they're offering everyone of our audience here on Current Geek $35 off your first week of deliveries if you go to HelloFresh.com and use the offer code CURRENTGEEK35. That's HelloFresh.com and the code CURRENTGEEK35. I've really enjoyed the meals I've gotten from HelloFresh, and I know you will as well. Once again, HelloFresh.com and the code CURRENTGEEK35. And we thank them for their support of the show. All right, we're back. And now it's time for the pop quiz.
America scores and wins.
That music right there means only one thing. It's time for the pop quiz. I can't get the volume to... There we go. The volume to go down. It's time for the pop quiz. We ask questions of our guests in areas of their expertise. Michael's done this before, so he knows the tricks. And Ashley, it's your first time. When you guys get an answer right, you're going to hear this. When you get it wrong, you'll hear this. And at the end, Tom will compare your scores, and we'll see who emerges as the winner. Ashley, let's start with you.
No pressure. Jason got perfect.
Yeah. Don't feel
not just on his, but also yours for that time.
I know.
How embarrassing. Not really. He did a good job.
Are we giving her the exact same questions from when?
No. Oh,
please do. Oh.
You wish. Instead, it is Ashley Robinson's questions are Star Trek, the original series. The original series. So this should be good because, you know, you're all up in the Kirk and the Spock and the whatnot there.
I am mostly the Spock, if I'm going to be honest.
Yeah. And, you know, Redshirt Diaries, which people should look up on YouTube, is all very much set in the Kirk universe. So go check that out. So here's your first question. It goes like this. In the episode, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield, what planet are the black and white aliens from?
Oh, man. We didn't get that far in the Redshirt Diaries. And as soon as I hear it, I'm going to be really mad because I know what they're called. I'm going to call them the Oreo people.
Yeah.
Wait, which ones? The ones who are black on the right side and white on the left, or the ones who are black on the left side and white on the right?
Oh, yeah. We got to figure that out.
Then the ones that are the opposite are the Junior Mint people.
Oh, I think it's a Hydrox, but yeah.
Junior yeah. Mint. Well, that unfortunately is incorrect. It is Charon, the Charon, Cheron, although I really liked
I can't
your answer.
I swear on the show.
Hey, you can. I just have to beep it. So
half-point delicious cookie illusion.
There you go. Half-point.
Oh, sweet.
Nice, nicely done. Okay, next up. In the episode The Devil in the Dark, Kirk orders McCoy to help heal the Horta, a giant pizza, according to me. What does McCoy use to treat the Horta?
Oh, but the little Horta eggs are not giant pizzas.
No,
most people call them the flying pancakes. McCoy uses...
Heal the Horta.
Pain!
Probably something that's in a... Hypospray, I know they have to make a pump, but I don't think the pump is what... they're looking for the pump. I don't think that's what heals them.
Here, I have something that'll help you. Here, see if this shakes your memory.
They all work.
There you go. Whoops, that wasn't supposed to play. For some reason, MASH music played.
Pain!
All right, so it's pain. Spock yelling pain. Does that help?
Sure. I don't know. I know they're looking for a pump, and then I know they all decide to work together at the end, and that they were all fighting over the eggs in the first place. So I don't know what McCoy used.
All right, I will give you a great big on that. The answer is thermal concrete.
Mm. Oh, F.
Well, you get a tenth of a point for explaining everywhere around the answer.
The whole episode.
Hey, that wasn't so bad. I think you did fine. Next up, here's here you go. What animal does Dr. Crater compare the salt monster / salt vampire to in The Man Trap?
It kind of doesn't look like a monster. It kind of looks like an alien from Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say a gorilla?
Incorrect. The answer is buffalo. The answer we're looking for.
Actually, she gets a full point for that one because what she said was, I'm going to say gorilla. And she did say gorilla.
Man, it feels like those are.
That is correct.
Yeah. When you don't do those on purpose, Tom will give you points for them. But if anyone ever tried to game the system and say, I think I want to say, and then says it, I don't think you'll get points for that. It's a very tricky point system, Tom does.
I'm going to remember that for the next time I'm on it. I fail spectacularly. Yeah.
All right, next up, we've got two more. In the episode Shore Leave, what character finds a pistol and starts shooting it in the air, I guess?
McCoy's with Alice in Wonderland and the Rabbit.
Yeah.
Kirk is chasing Dax around. It's either Uhura or Sulu, because Spock is with the girl and they're kissing each other, and McCoy is like a drunk cowboy.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say
spoiler.
I'm not. they have mint julep lilies. Sulu. Let's go with Sulu.
You are correct. Sulu.
Oh my
is
god! Thank
answer.
God I got one.
Yeah. Well done. Nicely
He's
done.
Like the weird weapons expert.
He is pretty weird. All right, final question. Let's see how you do on this last one. What episode does the crew have to deal with? What episode does the crew have to deal with a vampire cloud?
The Futurama episode where no fan has gone before.
I mean, I'm not Tom, but I'd give you bonus for that. The answer is Obsession, but that is true. That's
no,
the
but
one.
It's also, it's an alternative answer.
Yeah.
The Futurama.
Yeah.
Alternative facts.
Yeah, all right.
I think I've been to enough Trek conventions to know how to spell Melvar.
Nicely done. All right. Well, hold on to your butts because you may have done well. We don't know because we've got to see how Michael does. Michael Fay,
throw me a bone here.
Yeah,
come
throw
on.
Her a bone. Here you go. You're gonna love your category because you said something in the email that made me think you'll love it.
Oh no,
Dragonlance Chronicles.
Oh, I can't wait.
All right.
No, the best part about this is Hammond sent us a note with like, here's the booking, here's the Skype address, and here's what their quiz topic is gonna be. And so we get the one that's Dragonlance Chronicles, and then the email that I send after Hammond sends that message has Michael responding like, I hope my quiz topic isn't Dragonlance Chronicles.
You should never say that.
Yeah. So, all right. So a little history. Last year, my quiz topic was the 2008 Robert Downey Jr. Iron Man movie.
Yeah.
And you didn't get a chance to use the buzzer once because I aced it. Okay. So this year I was like, you know what? I'm going to go Marvel movie again. And I've been watching Captain America, the Winter Soldier. I've been studying.
Sure.
But Hammond asked for a couple of topics. So I threw Dragonlance Chronicles in there for some reason. I think looking at the book on the shelf at the time. It wasn't a good idea. I loved this series when I was a kid, but this is going to be,
okay.
You're
so
not
you going
to get a chance to play
it.
The ding once.
Yeah. So it was originally your idea though. It's just that he took the one you had hoped he wasn't going to take. That's the deal. All right. Well,
this will be entertaining nonetheless.
All right. Well, here goes then. First up, what was the first novel published in the Dragonlance series?
Dragons of Autumn Twilight.
You are correct.
I got one. That's it. I'm leaving on a high note. Thank you. This is a great episode.
It's been great to have you.
All right, George Costanza.
That's right. My internet's going down. All right, number two. who was the author of the Dragonlance novel, The Legend of Huma, or Huma? I don't know which way you say it.
David Letterman.
We'll just go Tracy Hickman.
Nice reference, Tom. The answer is incorrect. It's also an author who did a bunch of Warcraft stuff. Richard A. Knack. Richard Knack.
Yeah. Although I'm going to give you a half point because saying Tracy Hickman as a blind guess is pretty, you got a pretty good chance of landing it.
Yeah, it's so. Not bad. Yeah. It's not bad at all. In what year was the first Dragonlance novel published?
1983.
You are so close. 1984 is the correct answer.
Ooh.
1 year off, yeah, man.
That's a point. That's 6/10 of a point.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Are these good Thank books? You. I always heard they were good and I never read them.
12-year-old self loved these books.
Okay. All right. I may need to... I don't know. Yeah, we're talking about old books like Dune and this. Maybe I need to get back to some old stuff. What is the
read
name of
book.
The... I know. Read a book. It's in a book. Come on. Reading Rainbow. Sing it with me. Next up, what is the name of the gnome boat in the Dragonlance novel Conundrum?
Are you kidding me?
I'll tell you. I'll give you a hint.
The SS... Are you kidding me?
It's four syllables, and it is... kind of a dumb name. That's all I'll say.
Nope. The Whirling Dervish.
You are incorrect. The answer is Indestructible. Indestructible. Wait. Indestructible.
A terrible name for a boat.
Sorry, that's five syllables. I screwed up. Call me Sean Spicer.
See, if you'd given me five syllables. All right, Tom, can I get some points for the incorrect cluage here?
Uh-oh. He asked for
them. Yeah, you get a half point incorrect syllable count bonus.
Oh, well done. Thank all right. You. Usually asking for them screws you, but you did all right.
No, it's good.
But
I didn't realize that,
laid
that
out
was, I wasn't quite catching that is what happened there. So, yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Final question.
Upon further review.
What was the first novel in the Dragonlance Tales series, which was a collection of short stories? So the first novel in that Tales series.
I don't know. I'm just going to say Tales of Kryn.
Oh, my lord. I don't know what to do here, Tom. It's a bit of a toss-up. The answer is The Magic of Kryn. That's real close.
Oh, that's awesomely close.
The Magic of Kryn. You give him a half point because he got two of the four words right.
Good. I'll give you that and that. You got two, a little good, a little bad. All right. That's your quizzes. Who won? How'd they do, Tom?
This was tight. This was a tight match. But in the end, Michael finished with 3.1 and Ashley with 3.6.
Jeez.
Hey.
Nicely done.
That's
Ashley.
Really well done.
Good job.
Nicely. See, you
were
all worried.
We can pretty much call it a draw.
You were all worried. Now there was nothing to worry about. All right, let's do forecast.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Tom and I used to do a show called Forecast. We turned it into a segment for this show because we liked it so much. It was a way to keep it alive, and it's a way for us to predict the future in technology, in culture, in pop culture, and lots of things. And Tom came up with this week's, Tom, what do you got?
Food delivery in the future will have an option. This won't be the way all food delivery is done, but there'll be an option from some restaurants for a robot chef to come to your door, autonomous, comes to your door, prepare the food fresh in front of you so you can see the ingredients as it's made and eat it as soon as it's done.
Wow. All right. I think I like that. I mean, we were talking about HelloFresh earlier. The idea just takes it one step further. Now, can we mistreat this robot? Can we...
No, why would you want to mistreat the chef that is working so hard to prepare your meal, Scott?
Because this is the worry you have. I always think when you talk about a hot new tech, even a hypothetical one like this, I always think about how people are going to mistreat the system.
Well, no, what you want to do is hack it. So you order, you know, the ramen, right? Uh-huh. And then when it shows up, you hack it to give you the steak.
All right. Why can't you just play within the rules of the robot chef delivery system? Come on.
Because people don't. That's what'll happen. Look.
Will there be settings though that come like, can you pick like Bobby Flay, Gordon Ramsay, or is it just as if you
like
are making
that.
It yourself?
Oh, I love that
you
idea.
You could have celebrity chef robot settings.
Like,
definitely.
Like how you get a celebrity voice navigators for your Waze or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be all right. So wait, Do you want?
I would be down with Gordon Ramsay screaming at me while he makes calling me a stupid donkey and stuff. That'd be awesome.
Who's the one?
Anthony Bourdain one just gets drunk on your doorstep and never cooks you anything.
Yeah, no kidding. What about Anthony Bourdain? You could have a Bourdain robot and he could be kind of a jerk to everybody while he's there. See,
that'd and like right. maybe doing drugs at the same time, but that's part of the charm.
Yeah, we don't know. He might be dropping acid while he's eating a horse testicle in Zimbabwe or whatever. You never know with that guy. No, I'm all for this, Tom, but I want him to stay. I don't want him to just show up and then leave. That's the thing.
Well, if you've got the means, I'm sure you could buy a model for your house too.
Okay.
Download. And then there's going to be a whole thing about don't pirate famous chefs for your robot personalities. Mm.
But what's the value? Okay. Is there value though in him still standing hibachi style behind a counter, flipping stuff and making it the way that a human would do it? Or why not just have like a big oven looking thing that goes, your food is ready, burp, and then just shoots out a tray and there it is.
Well, yeah, I wasn't so much talking about the form factor here. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be all Futurama robot. Like, my idea was it would be delivery when you're like, I don't really want to spend a lot of money on a big robot and have in my house all the time. But sometimes I really want a hot meal that's fresh and I don't want to go to the restaurant. And when you order delivery, it always gets a little cold on the way.
Yeah.
So this says it's going to be that convenience of delivery where you don't have to sink any money into it. But it's gonna happen right in front of you.
All right. And will he be the food will be contained in the refrigeration unit that is the robot while he's in that transform?
Oh, yeah. No, the food's all fresh right there, and you get to examine it and approve it if you want.
So he just wheels in, goes and unfolds, right. And inside there's all this food.
You order the delivery, it comes immediately. Like it just comes from a nearby warehouse in minutes and starts.
Is it a drone?
To work.
Is it not a drone, right? Or is it a drone?
It could be a drone, right?
I mean, if it's a robot, isn't it on some level a drone?
Yeah, that's a good point.
This is true. Is it a flying drone?
That's right. Get specific.
Yeah, get it. Get it straight.
Stoic Squirrel in the chat room nailed it. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno bot.
There you go.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Someone's a dad in the chat room. Can I kick it like those Boston Dynamics robots?
Why do you want to hurt the robot that's making you your dinner?
I don't know.
You don't treat Kim this way when she makes you dinner. Why would you treat a robot this way?
I would see it and say,
why Scott's afraid of robots.
I know. I just want to say, is it stable? Will it be able to stand and hold my eggs? And I just want to just shove it and see if it can keep it safe.
I would hope so. Yes.
All right.
Click my CAPTCHA checkboxes for me?
Yes.
The answer is if it can stir fry your teriyaki, it can push your CAPTCHA box. That's for sure.
Okay, excellent.
Real quick, we have an email before we get out of here. This came to us from Don Crawls 56 is the name.
Of course it is.
He says, by the way, currentgeek@gmail.com is where you send these. He says this, dear show people, I guess that means us, not all that much longer till we get a Wonder Woman movie. Finally, what are your expectations despite the poor showing of Batman v Superman? Now, I happen to know Ashley is a huge Wonder Woman fan. And
hang on. Let me turn my camera and I'll show you.
Yeah, she's going to look at all this.
I have a Wonder Woman poster.
Oh, my gosh. Is that from the movie? Is that new? What is that?
It is. It's okay. One of the three that they put out in December.
Every post I see from you from Instagram or anywhere else, 9 times out of 10, if I close my eyes and open them, there'll be a Wonder Woman something there.
Woman Crush Wednesday is Wonder Woman Day on my Instagram.
Nice. So you're as equipped as anybody to discuss this. What do you think about how things are going, what we know about the movie so far? Are you nervous? Are you excited? Like, where are you at with it?
So I'm going to go full disclosure. I like Man of Steel, and I don't hate Batman v Superman. I gave Batman v Superman a really positive review. Mm. And then one of the talk show Jimmys, I don't know the difference, read it to Ben Affleck. So...
Oh, what?
I'm pretty positive on the franchise as a whole. And I think Gal Gadot is amazing. And I think she's a great choice for Wonder Woman. And I think if people can be excited about Tom Holland as Peter Parker as they are, then I'm allowed to be as excited about her as Wonder Woman. I do know some people who have worked on the movie in various capacities. And I know that internally, everyone understands that this is their first female-led superhero movie. This is their first franchise led by a character of color, and that it's really important that they do it right. So that gives me a lot of hope that it's going to be amazing. And if DC Warner Brothers can pull this off, then I think some of the mixed feelings that people have about, Man of Steel, BVS, Suicide Squad will really be assuaged because it is that important. Mm. But everything coming out of it looks great. And then Patty Jenkins said she wanted it to do for Wonder Woman what Superman the movie did for Superman. And that is very exciting because the original Superman movie with Chris Reeves, first of all, Christopher Reeves was a beautiful man. And second of all, it's a great movie. So
yeah, I agree.
I'm super hyped.
Okay, so clearly you're excited about it. I've always felt like Gal Gadot. She sounds like a Cardassian general on Deep Space Nine.
The same thing.
Yeah,
she does. Like,
when you pronounce her name correctly, yeah. Definitely.
When you say it right, it's real weird. Michael, where are you at with this movie? You excited?
So I hope that it's going to be good. I have essentially given up on the DC movies in terms of I don't go to the theaters to see them. I don't really go out of my way to watch them if they come to the streaming services. But nonetheless, I hope this is going to be good because especially for the reasons that Ashley just mentioned, I didn't even think about that like this is the first female superhero movie. Like this is awesome. That's so great. And I, you know, we need stuff like that. We need something like that to be great.
In some ways they're scooping Marvel because Marvel's had opportunities. They could have definitely done a Black Widow standalone film. They could have
like 17 whole movies.
Yeah, they really could have. And they haven't done anything. Well, I guess they've got Captain Marvel coming up, but that's a ways off. And she's, you know, that'll be female led, but they're a little behind the eight ball on this. This gives DC a real opportunity to bring one of the most venerable, important female heroes in comic book history to life and do it in a way, hopefully, that takes it away from the campiness that existed in the 70s and certainly in the Silver Age. And, you know, I'm as jazzed as you guys. I think it looks great. I really liked her. Like, my high point of Batman v Superman was her in it. And I loved her music. It's in the trailer again.
That's it's so good.
Got me all hyped. This thing's got Chris Pine in it, so we get a little Captain Kirk in there. It's going to be great. Tom, what do you think?
It sounds like I'm pretty close to Ashley on the opinion. I liked Man of Steel as well. I don't know that I liked Batman versus Superman as much as maybe Ashley did, but I liked it more than most people, I think. And the thing that I liked most about Batman versus Superman was Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Her parts were the best parts. And those were the parts that made the movie for me. So the idea of getting an entire movie of just her in good hands, as it sounds like, is very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's coming. Watch for it in 2018? Is that when we're getting that?
No, it's coming in June.
Oh, is it this year? I thought it was next. Oh, yes. I'm thinking Aquaman. Aquaman comes out in 2018. That's what I'm thinking of. And I'm excited about that.
Really? Yeah. You just confused Aquaman and Wonder Woman.
Well, no, I didn't confuse the characters.
Okay, they're both led by very attractive people. It's understandable.
I confused the DC release schedule. I just want to make that clear. They are not. Yeah, they're both played by very pretty people. Okay.
Jason Momoa is a very handsome man.
He
is. No doubt.
His bodyguards. You've
all seen the picture of him with his bodyguards, right?
Yeah.
They look like they're my size.
They're tiny.
Yeah, it was a good picture.
Tiny little people. They need bodyguards for them to keep them away from him or something. I don't know.
They were adorable.
It's like having your own. It's like having your own Hatchimal there with you or whatever.
Oh my God.
I don't know why I said that. All right. Hey, that's your email. Thanks for that email there, Dawn. And then feel free to send more in, folks. Currentgeek@gmail.com is where you'll send those. That brings us to the end of today's program. Real quick before we go, a couple of website mentions. Remind people again, Ashley, where they can go to find the new comic and so on.
You can go to jupiterjetcomic.com. We added a new reward today, a script review by Batgirl and Gotham Academy's own Brendan Fletcher. There's only one, so go get it before it's gone.
Nice. Only one. Jeez. That is a limited time offer, everybody. Michael, tell people where to find you. Where can they go?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at Mr. Rooney. That's MRROONI. Or just go to onepassword.com and sign up for a trial and get going there. This has been too short. Is there anything we could do to extend the show today, make this go for another
hour
and a half?
You like your time here, I understand. I think what I'll do instead is promise that both of you have passed the test, despite your low scores on the quiz.
Throwing you under the bus right now.
The test that determines whether you can be return guests or not have been passed. So well done. You're both coming back sometime soon. Tom Merritt, anything else before we go, sir?
Yeah, if you're an Audible listener, and maybe, I don't know, if you listen to the Beautiful Chaos, Beautiful Creatures series, and you liked that narrator, Kevin T. Collins, or you're a David Weber fan, and you like the Kevin T. Collins narrations of Shadow of Victory, I just want to point out that good old Kevin T. Collins will be narrating my book, Pilot X, and it's available for pre-order right now on audible.com.
Please go get
awesome.
It. It's so cool. How come there's no sample yet? I want to play that sample on my shows, and it's not there yet.
Because I don't think Kevin T. Collins has finished recording it.
Oh, well, all right. I await.
But it does have a length now, so that's a good sign. That means that they've got a file. So there should be a preview up soon.
All right. Well, I'm gonna play the hell out of that because I'm super stoked for you and that whole thing. Huge thanks to our guests. Thank you, everybody, who came and listened to us live. And, of course, as always, you can find us at currentgeek.com. Oh, gosh, what else? I know there's some other things. If I could just find my page. Here we go. Oh, there's the one. All
maybe
right.
Andrew Allen. You should thank him for his music.
Oh, I should do him. I should do that. He sends us these awesome things, and we love it. So thank you, Andrew Allen, for your theme music. We're about to play a little more of it now. Call us. Leave us voicemails. 801-471-0462. Current Geek on Twitter. Scott Johnson, Ace Detect. All that stuff. CurrentGeek.com. Once again, thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time for more Current Geek, everybody.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we finally break the seal on the new political regime with a look at the most likely legal challenges facing President Trump's recent executive order on immigration, banning entry from certain countries. Before diving into this order, a brief sidebar. This segment is not political and has no plans to become so, even with the current climate of the U.S. You will not find my personal views here, only education to make us all better equipped to face the conversations and interactions on social media and beyond about these hot topics. That said, let's look at this order. Headlined by the Mexico border wall, one of the top campaign focuses for President Trump was immigration, and he has wasted no time using executive orders to try and deliver on some of his promises. The first major immigration EO was a suspension of new refugee admissions for 120 days, coupled with a ban on travelers from 7 Muslim-heavy countries for 90 days. The order came out on a Friday afternoon, leading to a wild weekend of airport detentions, protests, and legal challenges. The Trump administration defends the order as protective of U.S. borders and helping restrict potential terrorism. However, the 4 federal judges who reviewed injunction orders challenging the enforcement of this order each put some type of hold on the order, finding that there's a substantial likelihood that the challengers to the order will prevail on the merits. So what are these legal challenges, and will they succeed? One challenge is that the order violates the 1965 updates to the Immigration and Naturalization Act, which prohibited preferences or discrimination on the basis of race, sex, nationality, or place of residence. Comments made by President Trump, and the wording of the order, may fall right into this prohibition. It's also possible that the order is too ambiguous to properly enforce, as it's been debated even by the administration whether it applies to green card holders, who are actually legal residents under immigration law. Other challenges yet to be made include whether the order complies with the Constitution. Legal experts plan to challenge this order based on failure to provide due process required under the Constitution, and also under the First Amendment as an improper establishment of religion, by favoring Christianity and other religions over Islam. Those challenges might be longer shots, as they rely more on outside circumstances, but the entire picture provides a negative outlook that this executive order will not survive in anywhere near its current form. The bottom line is, the prolific use of executive orders under Presidents Obama and Trump can lead to troubling results, but thankfully, hastily worded and poorly vetted orders can also be subject to easy legal attack. What will be interesting is not whether this EO survives, as it probably won't, but what future orders will be tailored better by this administration. Indeed, the Trump administration is already discussing another sweeping immigration order refusing entry and or deporting those who would or are dependent on public resources like welfare. The battles will likely continue as long as immigration is a primary focus of this president. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes, get more at frogpants.com.